That's the new thing. The Fiends were too busy talking to do talk radio to pay attention.
All right, so instead of a red dawn, let's talk about Uprising.
Okay, I'd like to talk about Uprising. I know it's time. I heard you. This is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker. You know, I've always dreamed ever since I was a little child that not only would me talking be so important to somebody that literally alarms would go off if I stopped doing it for 6 seconds, which does happen in our network studio, because that usually means something's wrong. But so we have to keep talking. But not only that, but it's like now I have a coach in my ear going, come on, man, talk. You got to be talking. People are listening, talking. Like we have this new thing of kind of like interactive meta behind the scenes, on the scenes. We tried this last night. We tried doing the Ernie Hancock thing, and people really liked it. I recorded some of the banter between myself and the co-host between the ads, like turn the ads down so you could still sort of hear them and then talked over them. And people really liked it. And I don't use all of it like Ernie Hancock. He's a great guy, but his stuff is just like a 2-hour show is like 3 hours long because he leaves everything from the ads in. I do some editing. But yeah, it's kind of turning into this like it's just a river of conversation, and we plug it into the public for 2 hours a night. But you know, we're kind of like almost intentionally ignoring breaks, you know, like the beginning of the show, like the music's going up, we're talking before it, we're talking during it, and then I hear our board op Kyle in my headphones going, "You're up, you're up, you're on." And I'm like, "I know I'm on. This is our new thing. Did you miss the memo, man? This is how the Fiends roll." Oh, sorry. So we got Lusander Fiend. Are you there, Lusander?
Yo, yo, yo. I'm here.
Yep. And we got young Nick Hazelton, the yak farmer. Are you there, Nick?
I'm here.
Yep. And I'm not being ageist saying young Nick. I'm celebrating his young age because he really is the next generation of liberty. Nick is 16 now, right?
Yep.
And he's getting school credit. Get up on your mic there a little bit, Nick. Say yep. Let me hear.
Right here.
Yeah. And Nick is getting school credit for talking anarchy on FCC-controlled radio. What a work.
And during the breaks.
And what a time to be alive. So, Nick, what's on your mind? What's new with you and your yaks? You have yaks.
The yaks have been kept in. They haven't gotten out in a while, so that's good. But this afternoon, this afternoon when I got home from school, my sister's goat was in labor, and I was the only one home, and I don't know anything about goat labor, so that was interesting.
Did you deliver a kid today?
No, she did it on her own, but I was pretty anxious about it. I had no idea what to do. I didn't know if anything was going wrong.
Yeah, goats
but
have
in
goats.
20
have,
minutes, there were two of them.
That's awesome. Yeah, goats have survived for a long time without Nick there to help. You know, I don't really know what you could do to help deliver a kid unless it was stuck or something. But yeah, goats deliver. They deliver, man. Yeah,
it sounds like Nick's farm animals could use a longer, shorter leash to keep them from escaping and getting knocked up and everything else.
Somebody posted a comment on the Fiend site yesterday. Someone I don't know who obviously is a fan, but they're like one of those fans who compliment you with death threats. You know, like this is not when I say I've gotten death threats, this is not a real death threat, but it's it was somebody who said something like you have too many commercials. Your commercials make me want to choke you with my longer leash or something like that. And I was like, commercial, man, on the podcast, we have like, okay, there's 7 breaks in the show. Like it's a 2-hour radio show, but without the ads, it's an hour and 12 or 14 minutes. Well, 22 minutes after I put some ads back in. I take out the 5-minute and 4-minute ad breaks from radio, and I put it in between 30 seconds and 2 minutes of our ads. And I'm also, and so it's not a lot of ads, but for people that are used to podcasts only, it's a lot of ads. But, you know, I'm kind of like, you make something 7 days a week, you know, including holidays, and don't put ads on it. It's not like we're making a lot of money on the ads. We don't make much money on this show. And it's more like it's one of the rewards of suffering to do our art is we get to put in ridiculous ads and ads for fun things that are good, like Creamy Radio Audio, which is, I probably make more money at that than I do at The Fiends, because I make about $200 a month in Amazon affiliate links from the article, the reviews I do of the equipment I use, and then people buy it and click on it. And I only review stuff I like, so it's solid. But, you know, then we do stuff that's ridiculous and good, like Campaign for Longer Leash and Shiny Badges ad. But, and then we just do some crazy stuff like the Compliacin ad. And it's like, come on, man. If you weren't making any money at it, wouldn't you just love the priceless fact that you can write a completely ridiculous comedy ad making fun of voting and the next day have it playing on 34 stations during campaign season right before and after real campaign ads? People don't even know.
Yeah, that's the Catmuff ad there.
Yep. So it's weird. They do call they call little goats kids. I think it's with two D's, right, Nick? Is it?
Kid. I don't know how it's spelled. I thought it was just K-I-D-S.
Yep. Nick's not as loud as Lou, but I can turn Lou down and turn the master up a little bit. But, you know, when I was 18, I was in a band with three people who were over 70 years old. And we played, like, standards from when they were kids and, like, songs I didn't even know. I played bass. It was, like, piano player, accordion player, and drum player. And their bass player had died. Like, he was their age. And I met one of them at my community college and was like, yeah, man, I play bass. And I, really? We need a bass player. And I wasn't in a band, and it wasn't my, it wasn't my idea of the band I wanted to be in, but it was better than not being in a band. And they were actually really fun. And we'd go play like VFW halls and, you know, old fogey bars and play for tips. And I actually like helped put myself through college, or, you know, like pay for food and beer during college doing that. And the band was called Three Old Goats and a Kid.
How were the groupies?
Well, you know, they're like, what's that joke? Oh, my
teeth. You don't hunt the cougar. The cougar hunts you.
My teeth are like the stars. They come out at night. Yeah. You heard that one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to turn y'all up, and this is going to work out now. Nick, say something. Tell the nice people about yourself. Yeah. Hello?
Sound better?
Yeah.
Lot better?
No, a lot better. I'm still working on it. So you guys chat amongst yourself. This is a teaching hospital, and I'll work with the levels. So go on. Go on.
Alrighty. Earlier this week on Monday, I went down to the Michigan Urban Farming Initiative and took part in the Lysander Spooner Day of Voluntarism.
Nice.
Because Monday was Lysander Spooner's birthday.
It's what voluntarists celebrate instead of the 4th of July.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
And Armistice Day and Memorial Day, yeah.
But the event was officially called Martin Luther King's Day of Service. But
they have the same birthday.
I don't particularly care for that.
No, it's that the Martin Luther King birthday is faked. It's the Monday around his birthday, right?
Yeah,
it's a federal holiday.
The federal holiday.
That's ironic because the feds tried to kill him, man. The FBI were sending him like letters, blackmailing him to try to get him to commit suicide. So it's kind
of there was actually a civil court judgment that stated that the government was responsible for his death and that they did kill him.
Did anyone get money for that, or what? How do you recompensate a family for that?
You know what? It's been a long time since I've read the article. I don't remember all the details that go along with it. I just know that in a civil trial, the government was found guilty, and they probably didn't pay off, or just paid off in like Monopoly money or something like that.
They printed more money to pay it off, probably.
Yeah. Or they paid it off and they said, oh, by the way, you owe exactly the same amount in back taxes.
It's a government trial with a government settlement paid out with government money printed by the government. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, yeah, it was a real good time. Being that it's wintertime here in Michigan, there's plenty of snow on the ground, and it wasn't dealing with a whole lot of farming or anything like that. But they have this very large building in the property that they have, and it's a very old building, and they're gutting it out right now. It's going to be turned into a community center. So we went out there, and I got out there in the afternoon, so I wasn't there for the morning work detail, but just tearing down plaster or drywall, stuff like that. And, you know, the little boards that go behind the plaster and drywall and getting rid of all that junk. And, yeah, made a lot of progress on it. I think probably one more day will do the trick. From the time that I was out there, I counted about, I don't know, maybe somewhere between 10 and 15 people, but I don't know who got out there before I did and, you know, left at like, let's say noon or so, but yeah, it was a real good time. Made some good progress. They've had some nice changes since the last time I was out there, which was, I believe, in late July or maybe early August.
Nice.
But anybody that wants more information on it, it's miufi.org, miufi.org, Michigan Urban Farming Initiative.
Cool.
And it's a neat little operation. I guess when they get everything settled for what they're planning on doing, they're going to have one of the houses will be a dorm for interns that are coming out there to work on the program and people that are passing through that want to check it out. So, you know, it can be a little flop house for transients and things like that. And I've actually had some of my friends that were interested in coming up here for a couple of days or a week or so to check it out.
Well, you know, transient houses are always great opportunities for proselytizing and brainwashing, you know, whether it's a religion or whether it's Alcoholics Anonymous or whatever it is. Like, you get people at their lowest, you give them a bowl of soup, you give them a little light housework to make them feel useful, give them a shower and some new clothes, a couple weeks of that, and you could just give them your whole world view and they'll probably accept it.
Well, all right, not exactly that type of transient. People that are going around on the urban gardening agricultural world tour.
Really?
You know, looking at different
things. That's a circuit now? I missed the memo. I used to get the newsletter, but I didn't know it was a circuit by this point.
Well, did you subscribe to the newsletter?
No, but do you ride the rails for that?
Sometimes.
And people think I'm kidding, but riding the rails is coming back, isn't it, over the past 10 years?
I haven't done it, but
it's, you know, not in the like Great Depression sense of you got to do it, but more in the sense of like, hey, that sounds more fun than college. You know, I'll get more life experience getting beaten up by railroad police. You ever ride? Hey, Nick, you ever ride the rails?
No,
I don't recommend it. But do they teach the hobo codes in the icons in school? Where you go?
No.
Okay. Well, yeah, there's little icons that hobos used to like scratch in fence posts, like mean dog here or nice lady who will give you food scraps or, you know, easy mark. People, yeah. You look it up. You think I'm kidding? Google it, man. We'll be back.
All right.
On the Freedom Fiends. We have this trip to the market.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do! Quit telling me what to do! Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school, and this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
You know, people think that we're like less professional because we're already talking when the show comes on. No, we're more professional because we know the rules so well that we've mastered the rules and now we can break the rules here on the Freedom Fiends. This is Michael Dean broadcasting live and worldwide from Windowless Bunker. I'm also talking to Lysander Fiend, who's coming from about 4 miles away from 8 Mile Road.
Jump the gun, start over.
Start over? What is this, man? What is this? You know, this whispering in my ear. He came back. He said, you jump the gun, start over. That's a joke because you can't start over. But he knows that we're so pro that he can do that without me messing up. It's kind of like when I heard when the Red Hot Chili Peppers went and did the album with it was Rick Rubin or who was it? It was some old like Sly and the Family Stone kind of producer. And the guy was like whispering in their headphones during guitar solos, like going like, yeah, uh-huh, come on, yeah, do it. And they were like, if it were anybody else, they would have told him to shut up. But they like had so much respect for the guy that they just went like, yeah, man. So,
yeah, all three of us are the voice in your head.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, Muffy.
Well, before we talk about Muffy, I wanted to talk about the feast of Saint Anthony Kiedis. It is practiced only in the country of Hungary and only by people with a left hand. So everyone should know about that. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding about the fact that we didn't explain who Lysander Spooner is, and probably 98% of our radio audience are like, who? So who is he?
Lysander Spooner was a great man.
Great man. Yeah.
No, he was a great guy, but he was definitely a man ahead of his time and probably above average in skills, qualifications, and accomplishments.
And the ladies really liked him.
Hey, it's the beard.
Yeah.
It's the beard. But some of his greatest accomplishments were he ran a postal delivery service in competition with the United States Postal Service. And he ran it for 7 years, charging less and providing better service. And I can't remember exactly what the name of it was. I believe it was the American Mail Letter Carrier or something like that. I don't remember. But anyway, he was out competing the post office. And then they came along and said, here, have some government. You're trying to violate our monopoly. And they shut him down.
Yeah.
he was also a lawyer, and he had no formal college education for law school and stuff like that. And the law was that if you did not have those education requirements, you would have to work as a apprentice in a law firm for 5 years before you could be a full-blown lawyer and go out and work in the courtroom. And he was actually able to get his certification early because of his skills and abilities. As a matter of fact, it was because of him that law requiring the 5-year apprenticeship was thrown out. But he also wasn't real successful in law because he was also a writer, a pamphleteer, and he wrote things like No Treason, The Constitution of No Authority, where he just completely lambasted the Constitution, the ratification of it, and the idea that anybody who had not signed it was a party to it.
Hey, Nick, have you read that, Nick?
I have read a little bit of it.
In school? They teach that in public school?
Where you go? No. On my own. I've never heard of Lysander Spooner in school.
Well, there is a YouTube audiobook version of it, and you could just go to YouTube and type in No Treason, The Constitution of No Authority, and it's about 2 hours long.
YouTube's better in school, man. It's much better in school.
Yeah. Well, anyway, he goes down what has happened since ratification of the Constitution, and No Treason was written in 1867. But he goes through and talks about, you know, how nobody is actually a party to it unless they signed it. He goes through the violations that have been imposed on Americans since the ratification. And his closing line, which will drive status absolutely batty, is, but whether the Constitution really be one thing or another, this much is certain, that it has either authorized such a government as we have had or has been completely powerless to prevent it.
Yeah, man. It's like, here, have some government, like you said. Hey, Nick, would your music teacher or history teacher know who produced the Red Hot Chili Peppers record Freaky Styley?
I have no idea. I don't know what that is.
Okay. I don't know. Yeah, that'd be in the like the ancient music section. But it was George Clinton from P-Funk, from Parliament Funkadelic, was the guy I was trying to think of. I forgot if I got his name, but there was like whispering in their ear during guitar solos in the studio going like, yeah, uh-huh, yeah, do it, uh-huh, yeah. And the, you know, they had so much respect for him that like if it was anybody else, they would have told him to jump in the lake, but they were like, yeah, man, cool.
Just like George Clinton, Lysander Spooner was a noted abolitionist.
Yeah, George Clinton's the president. Yep.
And I
played in a band.
No more Clintons.
I played a band with Eric McFadden. He played my band Slish, that we're going to actually hear some of the music on the show, and he played with George Clinton, still does from time to time, in the P-Funk All-Stars. heck of a musician.
No more Bushes, no more Clintons.
Yeah, but more George Clintons.
With Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
You've read books.
Yeah. See, I think Kyle should be whispering in my ear, trying to mess me up, going, yeah, uh-huh, yeah, yeah, do it, uh-huh. Oh, yeah, yeah. But you're really distorted. It's kind of like you threw a Marshall amp or something, but yeah, it's good.
I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't have you up because you were talking through the end of the ad and beginning of the segment.
I knew it. It was intentional. That was the point. I've done it both segments.
I thought you were just failing and your skills have gone out the window.
No, man. I'm so skilled that I can play between the notes, man.
If it's on purpose, then I'll just bring it up.
I'll just say it every section that I'm doing it on purpose. We're a teaching.
Wait the 10 seconds, or just bring you up.
No, just leave me up. We're a teaching hospital. I want to teach. I can be the bad example.
George will yell at you about the stations dropping, but he's not here.
Stations will drop it for that?
No, on the first 10 seconds, some stations drop a ID.
Oh,
in the first 10 seconds.
Yeah, I hate that, man.
And so they cry about like don't have words or music singing or
music. Yeah, I talked to Ty today. He won't let me use Fiend Phone. Oh, that's going to disappoint Lou. He won't let me use Fiend Phone until we get a Linux version of it.
Well, then.
I don't care. I can just take the night off. I'll just, like, connect with the Comrex and then have people connect to me, and then I'll just go, like, you know, watch TV.
Why won't you use the what?
Oh, Fiend Phone, the utility that we invented.
Well, I have no control of those things.
Oh, I'm not asking you to. I'm just saying, like, that was one of the reasons I made it, was so... They're not really that, but they're that easy to guess.
Kind of like the nuclear launch codes being 00000 for 20-some years.
No, it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, I think.
No, it was actually 8 zeros.
For like most of the Cold War.
I don't know, maybe after the Cold War.
I wonder if when you opened the nuclear football app back then, it said, like, congratulations on your purchase of a 1951 Rayathon nuclear football.
Shall we play a game?
I'm going to say that when we come back. But I'll stop talking over the breaks, the intros. It's rude. I'll say my corporate masters had a talk with me during the break. Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. I've been working with computer programmer Derek Slopey to create Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiend Phone.
Fiend Phone is free, open-source software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try the Windows beta version of Fiend Phone right now at fiendphone.com. But we're also raising money to vastly improve Fiend Phone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com and join the conversation, because if you don't, you'll set liberty back 2,500 years.
That's fiendphone.com. FEENPHONE.com. Foxtrot, Echo, November, phone.com.
Fiend Phone. I never knew remote audio could be this good.
All right, so I'm doing the right thing. I'm not talking for the first 10 seconds because... some stations do replace that with their own promos and liners. And yeah, during the break, I was contacted by my corporate masters that control, you know, the grand cabal that controls talk radio. And they inserted. See, here's the thing. To be on radio, you have to have this chip implanted in the base of your neck. And they basically how it works, it's really hard to describe, but basically they can kind of text message something into your brain. Like, and it's really short. It's like maybe twice Twitter length, like two or three lines. And you kind of see it in front of you, and you can barely see it. But when you see it, if you don't look, you have to look at it against a dark background, like a curtain or something, so you can really see it in your field of vision. And if you ignore it, it becomes really painful. And it, you know,
oh yeah,
oh yeah. I have the one that's in my ear too. Can you guys hear that?
Yes, yeah. I can.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. So the corporate masters have come down on me and said that I should not try to reinvent talk radio by just talking all the time through everything. That there's a tech. It doesn't matter what we say, but there's a method to the madness, and I should follow the company playbook. It's not the company. It's talk radio. It's like, you know, George Soros and George Bush in a secret bunker with Dick Cheney somewhere drinking the blood of infants, and then they listen to all the talk shows at once, and they type. They have one of their minions. Well, they use their minions for footrests, and then those people have little laptops next to them, and they type what their masters tell them to, and it inserts into my brain, and it hurts if I don't pay attention to it. So that's all.
Well, hey, you know, you gotta get the message out somehow. And you know, I used to have this, you know, lizard humanoid that stood over me, but since getting the chip, I haven't had to have him, you know, hanging out sitting in the chair next to me.
Well,
because I gotta tell you, it was creeping me out.
The guy running the show gets a different chip than the co-host. I don't think Nick's even chipped yet. Maybe we should just let Nick babble. Are you chipped yet, Nick?
No, I'm not.
Oh man, cool. Because see, I have the chip that'll cause great pain if I don't do what I'm supposed to, but the co-hosts just basically have like the compliance chip that kind of like makes them go along with whatever the host is saying. And it doesn't cause them pain, but it causes them pleasure the more they go along with the flow. But Nick's not chipped yet, man. I mean, they'll probably chip you tomorrow, you know? So what, tell us something, Nick, tell us something that's unchipped.
Well, put me on the spot, man. I should be better prepared for this.
Oh, he doesn't need a chip yet. But that's what...
Right.
He's too young to be chipped.
He doesn't need standards.
He doesn't need a chip because he's 16. He has hormones doing the messing with him. I got a question for you, Nick. When are you going to load up your backpack, hop on the back of one of your yaks, and ride out here to Detroit and check out the urban farming?
I was actually thinking about that. You told me that I should come in. Speak or something, and I thought, well, that'd be kind of cool, but I don't have enough money to get anywhere.
I'm not saying
you don't need money.
Yak,
you don't need money.
Transportation is free.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. I'm not going to encourage Nick to do that. But let's talk about it in a theoretical sense. I think Nick would have a harem of young, unwashed, dreadlocked hippie girls if he did that. He'd be the coolest guy there, man.
Everybody there was pretty clean.
Oh, I'm thinking of my experience in Detroit, which was at the anarcho-communist squat. What was that place called, Lou?
Oh, Trumbleplex.
Trumbleplex, yeah. Yeah, I showed my film DIY or Die there. That was one of the first conversations you and I had. Lou and I had, we were on the Pigeon, which is encrypted instant message off the record. And we were just looking at pictures of the Trumbleplex and being like, like, I can almost smell these people through the pictures.
I haven't been to Trumbleplex, but I have been to Tumbleweed Universe City.
Don't know it.
And that's another anarcho-communist commune, bunch of dirty commies. And I mean dirty.
Yeah.
It's, I won't want to live that way.
They do composting on their person is what it is.
Yeah.
They're part of the ecosystem directly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way,
not my scene.
I got some low tech news. I got some high tech news is we're still working on automatic port forwarding, but we're kind of joking today, but I'm kind of serious about what the next, the third software release may be 6 months down the line from the Beastlick Internet Policy Consortium, which is the company that made Meowbit and Fiendphone. We're thinking the next thing is going to be called Fiendban, and it's going to be a migrating from site to site methodology for any sites that you have to do hell banning. Do you guys know what hell banning is?
No, I don't.
It's a really great way to deal with trolls. Basically, you you block somebody from posting on your site. Well, they still see what they post, but nobody else sees what they post.
Ah.
It's kind of like slow psychological torture for people who are trying to mess with you on the internet.
And, that's nice.
Yeah. And
so here they are just typing away thinking that that they're going to be cursing you out and calling you everything but a child of God, and nobody else sees it after their 6 hours of keyboard commandoing in their mom's basement.
Yes. Yeah. And it's a thing that exists. We did not invent hell banning, but there's not an easy way to do it on WordPress at all. So, and we're going to try to figure out a way to do it where, you wouldn't have to require that people log in to post. Like, the best way to handle comments on a WordPress blog is people can post, but their first post they ever do is held in moderation. So you can kind of see whether it's spam or not. And if it's not, you let it go. And then, you know, you can keep an eye on them and block them if they get too spammy or too screechy. But there's some people that are kind of like, there's somewhere between, you know, good netizens and horrible. You know, a good example would be concern trolls, which are people that they're kind of like sick and twisted, and they want to be able to tell you why you're wrong, but they pretend to be your friend. Like, they'll be like, I've been, and they'll actually, like, generally, like, a good concern troll or one that does it well, it's a horrible thing, but one who does it well generally, like, actually listens to your content. Like, they'll be like, I really enjoy the Freedom Fiends a lot, and especially, you know, the shows that you've done with Lou lately and Nick. Those are the best. And, you know, I really like what Nick said about not being chipped. And, you know, like, they'll say enough so you know that they're not just a random person. And then they'll say something like, but I'm concerned with what you said about blah, blah, blah. And that's the word they always use, is concern. It's a form of passive aggressive trolling. It's called concern trolling. And it can reach, like, heroic standpoints of just, like, absolute lunacy, to where it's generally too people who kind of get obsessed with you in a negative way are concern trolls. Like, you know, people that come on every day and post like 400 word answers telling you why you're wrong. Like Ben Stone said it really well about one guy that was doing it to us. It's like they cook you a wonderful meal every day, and somewhere hidden in that meal is a little dog turd, you know.
Now, is there any particular demographics that comprises the concern troll population? Would it be like the social justice warriors, or?
Oh, no, I would say
it's, who are these people?
I would say it's unwed males between 21 and 31 who are into Linux programming. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding, man. I'm kidding. Well, the last one we had was, but I like Linux. I've been working with a Linux programmer, or talking with a Linux programmer who might actually make a Linux Fiend phone. But no, social justice warriors are really big on concern trolling. The biggest place I found it, like, it's almost universal, is with defenders of Stefan Molyneux. Yeah, because I think, you know, it's kind of like, they're kind of like a virus that is morphed with time when you get the antivirus protection. You know, like when you... when people just finally started blocking anyone who came on and said, you're horrible, when they say, you're horrible, Stefan Molyneux is God, you know, they block that. So what they've morphed into over the years is, it's really common. Like, if I had, you know, a millibit, a thousandth of a Bitcoin for every time I've heard a Molyneux defender on my site or some other site say, like, big fan of the show, man. I really like the Freedom Fiends. You guys are good. And I like what you do, but I really have to, I have concern that you may be wrong with your treatment of Stefan Molyneux. And, you know, like, I've seen that on our, like, 20 people doing that. It might be just be one person with 20 sock puppets, but, and I've seen it all over Facebook. I've seen it all over YouTube. That is, I almost feel like Stefan Molyneux has taught his inner circle that that's the technique to use. And they've, like, you know, brought it out through the tentacles to the lesser users, but it's really common with Molyneux, like the concern troll thing.
This sounds like a bit of an offshoot of nonviolent communication. I know this is something that Stefan is really into.
Oh, the just, puppets, the puppet thing.
Yeah. But one of the things, not the NVC can actually be, you know, considered effective communication if you're using it to know exactly what a person's trying to say, so that you're not arguing and swinging at imaginary.
Hey, I'm going to interrupt you right here, buddy. I don't tolerate that. I'm kidding. Is it? Isn't that why isn't that why they had the giraffe on the picture of the Emma Michigan Peace and Liberty sign up thing?
Yeah. 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 Because it's supposed to be the mammal or the animal with the largest heart. You know, proportion to size or something like that.
But that's anyway. Also, it's also a symbol of the nonviolent communication. And to be clear, if people don't know, nonviolent communication, by that, we don't just mean communicating nonviolently. We mean a specific school of thought that is epitomized by, there's a guy, search nonviolent communication on YouTube. The first thing that's going to come up is this video that's got a million hits or something of a guy sitting on a couch with hand puppets. And it's the cultiest looking thing I've ever seen. And, the funny thing is, like, I kind of think that nonviolent communication, that brand of it, and under that banner, kind of is a cult. It's a cult, the way people push it and say, if you don't do this, you're worse than Hitler and you're killing me and you're against me. But, you know, there's also kind of like they use the leftist straw man of like, if I say, I don't really like that nonviolent communication system, they'll immediately say like, oh, so you're into violent communication. I'm like, no, man, that's like saying if you're against Obamacare, you're against people having health care, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's very easy to use it for manipulative purposes. I don't try and use it for manipulation. I have definitely mixed sarcasm with it. You know, like, for example, I was talking to somebody. I says, you know, my need for you to go bleep yourself is not being met.
a lot of it leaks over into 12-step programs, too. It's not in their original literature, but it gets cross-pollinated. And we'll talk down about that more when we get back to the crypto market. Meow.
Flames.
Give me a yak sound, Nick.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Hounding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
Uh-huh. Oops. Yeah. Uh-huh. Oops. It's the Freedom Fiends friendly family zoo, family petting zoo. And Lou, tell us about nonviolent communication. I think the name of this episode is going to be The Freedom Fiends Guide to Violent Communication, but probably not. All right, go ahead.
Well, as you mentioned earlier, nonviolent communication doesn't necessarily mean not beating each other over the head. It's looking for clarity and also finding out that the other person that you're conversing with, making sure that their needs are met, their needs to be heard, and their needs to be understood and stuff like that. In management, there's a course, management communications or effective communications, and what that does, just like NVC, it seeks to eliminate confusion. For example, if I am speaking with a dirty commie and he says capitalism is the devil's work, if there was a devil and a god, you know, I could always say, well, you dirty commie, you know, capitalism is the greatest thing. But really what you need to do is understand what he means by capitalism, because his definition of capitalism may be entirely different than yours. And many of the people of the leftist persuasion that I have spoken to, they would actually agree. Well, what they define as capitalism is actually corporatism, meaning marriage of corporation and state, or, you know, basically rich guys buying off government. But they never seem to acknowledge that it's government selling out to rich guys. But that's a whole other story. But if you can come to an agreement with them, and you guys see the same way that, yeah, using government to benefit yourself at the expense of others is bad, that eliminates a lot of the headaches and hassles, and you're able to actually move forward with it.
Yeah.
Now, with the nonviolent communication, they do that. In management communications, is called information confirmation. But with the NVC, it's a lot more feels-based, where making sure that, you know, you're being understood and that you're having your opportunity to be heard and all this other stuff. It's, you know, if anybody that goes and watches the video on it, they'll get a really good introduction to it.
My problem with it, even if it works, is I feel like a puss when I'm using it or having it used on me. You know, when somebody starts saying, I want you to know that I feel that my needs are not being met when you talk about the government the way you do on the radio, whatever, you know, like it just sounds like, you know, picture a guy who, and I really haven't had much of it used on me. My wife and I have our own version of it. It's a very calm and reasonable conversation. It's not even a version of that. It's it doesn't sound like that. It doesn't sound like, you know what it sounds like to me? Nonviolent communication reminds me of like a guy who was a young buck and a player his whole life and then got married. And then 5 or 10 years into the marriage, his wife demands they go to marriage therapy. And all of a sudden he finds himself being forced to talk in ways he never did. Like, yes, dear. Well, when I feel that you feel that, but you know, it's like, mm-hmm. like just insert, you know, insert your nodules, you know, check them at the door kind of thing. But that's just me.
And it certainly can be used for manipulation purposes. A lot of times when somebody gets into a discussion, and another problem that I have with it is a lot of the people that practice it, they sound very clunky and mechanical when they're doing it. It has absolutely no flow to it. So it's just really horrible to listen to. And that just, you know, that doesn't help my feels, my needs for, you know, proper communication not being met when they do that. But yeah, it's, yeah. Like I said, manipulative, feels oriented, clunky and mechanical.
I'm looking at these pictures that Nick just sent. They're awesome. Nick broke his headphones or microphone or so. What did you do, Nick? And why are you wearing like a hipster turban right now?
I broke my good headphones. I don't know what I did to the headphones. It might have been involved when I actually broke my microphone. I tried to plug my headphones in a little too hard and the headphone jack inside the microphone broke.
So you're using your cheap headphones. You're using your cheap headphones and they kind of leak. And with Fiendphone, you need headphones that don't leak audio because there's no noise reduction because it reduces the sound quality, no echo cancellation. So we had to have you wrap like a scarf and a hat around your head. And it looks pretty hip, man. I like it.
And sealed in duct tape.
Yeah, thanks.
Yep. Worms. We'll be back hermetically sealed for your pleasure after this trip to the market. Worms.
Shiny badges on your jacket, shiny badges.
This is Davi Barker from shinybadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at shinybadges.com, write worms in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Across state lines and interfering with the concept of interstate yaks or commerce. All right.
Saddlebags, yak packs.
Yeah. So, Nick, you got Nick, pull up that thing there from Wikipedia on the history of coffee, please, because this episode is called Send Lawyers, Goats, and Coffee, which is a takeoff on a song that we like. You got it there, Nick? Young Nick.
Yeah, I got it.
The Yak Man. All right, read it up, brother.
Yeah, here it is. Legendary accounts. According to legend, ancestors of today's Oromo people were believed to have been the first to recognize the energizing effect of the coffee plant, though no direct evidence has been found indicating where in Africa coffee grew or who among the native populations might have used it as a stimulant or even known about it earlier than the 17th century. The story of Kaldi, the 9th century Ethiopian goat herd, who discovered coffee when noticed how excited his goats became after eating the beans from a coffee plant, did not appear in writing until 1671 and is probably apocryphal. The original domesticated coffee plant is said to have been from Harar in Ethiopia.
Yeah, and I don't recommend anyone listening, including Nick, give coffee to their goats to confirm this. Seriously. Give your coffee to Lou.
Yeah. Oh, I tell you what, I'm so jacked up today. I'm on my 8th cup of my high capacity magazine.
Well, go, Jack, go. Jack, go, Jack, go. Tell us what's up about coffee and banning it.
Yeah, I've had enough coffee to jack up a small village today. But anyway, and of course, when something is found to be useful and wonderful and just, you know, the nectar of the gods, of course, you know, some filthy status has to try and ban it. And there are 5 historical attempts at banning coffee. This comes to us from mentalfloss.com. First one that's shown on here is in Mecca. Coffee was banned in Mecca in 1511. As it was believed to stimulate radical thinking and hanging out. The governor thought it might unite his opposition. Java also got a bad rap for its use as a stimulant. Some Sufi sects would pass around a bowl of coffee at funerals to stay awake during prayers. Note to Starbucks, time for a new size, the funeral bowl.
Well, actually, isn't it that that coffee was banned in Mecca for a while and then... Like some Muslim cleric came up with kind of lawyer language of like, no, we should unban it because it allows you to stay awake and pray longer.
Who knows? I mean, that would make sense. Or maybe they needed it for war or something like that. Because just as the U.S. government banned hemp, they had that little exception during World War II, because there's always an exception for war.
Oh, my dad grew hemp. My dad grew hemp because the government asked him to during World War II. And he was actually really upset that he didn't get to go fight in the war to save Joseph Stalin. They wouldn't let him. He wanted to go, but he was a farmer. And they said, no, you're going to stay here and make milk for the troops. And so he didn't get to fight in the Great War, but he got to help support the troops, not only by making milk, but by growing hemp for ropes for the Navy.
Yeah, and the U.S. government had that wonderful propaganda film that you can find on YouTube called Hemp for Victory.
We used an excerpt for that in the Guns and Weed movie, actually.
Yeah. Next up, Italy. When coffee arrived in Europe in the 16th century, clergymen pressed for it to be banned and labeled satanic. But Pope Clement the Eighth took a taste, declared it delicious, and even quipped that it should be baptized. On the strength of this papal blessing, coffee houses rapidly sprang up throughout Europe.
You know, I have a feeling that when, speaking of prohibition, I have a feeling that when they finally fully legalize marijuana and encourage everyone to grow it so they can tax them through the roof, I'll bet the government will kind of revamp that Hemp for Victory film and make a high budget YouTube video that looks really cheesy. That's called like pot for taxes or something, teaching you how to grow your own little stash and then how to fill out the paperwork to report how many plants you're growing.
Yeah. Number 3, Constantinople. After Murad IV claimed the Ottoman throne in 1623, he quickly forbade coffee and set up a system of reasonable penalties. Reasonable, he says. The punishment for a first offense was a beating. Anyone caught with coffee a second time was sewn into a leather bag and thrown into the waters of the Bosporus.
That's horrid. That's government, though.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Here, have some government. Number 4, Sweden. Sweden gave coffee the axe in 1746. The government also banned coffee paraphernalia, so you couldn't have your coffee bean clips or your steam kettles.
Yeah.
With cops confiscating cups and dishes. Oh, my God. King Gustav III even ordered convicted murderers to drink coffee while doctors monitored how long the cups of Joe took to kill them.
So this was like before – this was the proto-Nazi medical experimentation. What?
Yeah, Dr. Mengele I.
Was this Turkey?
That was Sweden.
Sweden. Oh, the only country that still has a king, isn't it? Or it's still ruled by a king.
I don't know.
We have listeners in Sweden.
I don't pay attention to that king stuff. But anyway, and then number 5, this should come as no surprise, Prussia. In 1777, Frederick the Great of Prussia issued a manifesto claiming beer's superiority over coffee. He argued that coffee interfered with the country's beer consumption, apparently hoping a royal statement would make Prussians eager for an eye-opening brew each morning. Frederick's statement proclaimed His Majesty was brought up on beer, explaining why he thought the breakfast drinking was a good idea. Now, that's just mercantilism. That's just that protectionism. Is.
He probably owned the beer distiller, or the beer, the places they make the beer, the breweries, yeah.
Yeah, or as they would say there, Brauerei.
You know, I want to go through this whole list, but I want to jump ahead to the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. In London, England, there was a time, you know, in the please, sir, may I have another kind of orphanage where they're rounding up Irish children and making delicious dishes out of them because there's so many of them, supposedly. Oh, come on, I'm just making a modest proposal, but. During that time, society was booming so quickly that technology couldn't really catch up with dealing with that many people in one place. So in London, the water was toxic. It all had cholera. You couldn't drink it because people were pooing in the street and, it would just wash into the water table. So nobody drank the water. Everybody drank beer. So basically, at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, everyone was coming to work with a buzz and then drinking beer throughout the whole day while working with machines in factories, when machines and factories were new things and had, no safety and were just giant man ripping devices. And there was no insurance, no nothing. Just, we're docking your pay because you lost your arm today and you got to pay for the cleanup of the blood, that kind of stuff. The stuff that made people want to start unions, and unions were probably a good idea until they got involved with the government and became part of the government. But, when they're machine gunning people on strike, it's probably time to have a union. But, so people were just, getting hammered and being sluggish and not working very efficiently. And then they started selling coffee in England, and all of a sudden, you could drink coffee cause you boiled the water and it would kill the cholera. So all of a sudden people were replacing their morning six glasses of beer before lunch and then four over lunch with coffee throughout the day. And that was part of the boom of the Industrial Revolution. They went from being just logy and drunk to being amped on coffee, and it moved society ahead a lot quicker. So there.
Now, could you imagine if coffee was banned or heavily taxed here in America? If they put a sin tax on it, if New York City was charging $15 a cup because the government wanted people to drink less coffee?
Don't give me any ideas.
Well, realistically, the colonists, they went to war over a 3% tax on tea. That's not even coffee. Could you imagine what would happen if they put 100% tax on coffee?
People would pay it. People would pay it, and they would sit in Starbucks and drink their $19 lattes and post angry blog posts about it from the free Wi-Fi at the coffee shop.
I think the coffee production down in South and Central America would get ramped up, and it would replace cocaine on the smuggling into the States. But just imagine if coffee got banned. Because, if coffee got banned today, the average person would be like, oh, my God, what is this? This is just nonsense. But 60 years in the future, when people would talk about, oh, my God, coffee was such a horrible thing. It's so good that it was banned. You had these turf wars over coffee, and people were addicted to it, and they couldn't even function without, drinking a cup in the morning. Oh, my God, and you just have, coffee madness or latte madness. You'd have the propaganda films and all sort of stuff, and then you'd have the legalized coffee movement, and then you'd have the mini status coming out. Well, legalize it, tax it, and regulate it, and then you'd have you know
3%
the anarcho movement that says just decriminalize it.
The anarcho movement, just decriminalize it. That's the minarchist movement.
Okay. Well, yeah, that would be the mini minarchist or mini status.
And then you'd have you'd have the people who are kind of like, well, we should be able to have it, but it should have to be 3% as much caffeine as there is now, 3% caffeine.
Yeah, but all the propaganda that went on over the 60 years would set in, and they say, well, they had to ban coffee because you had white women dating black men, musicians
hanging
and stuff.
Out in coffee joints.
Yeah, hanging out in coffee joints, and they were, just all hopped up and everything. It's,
yeah.
But anyway, yeah. So send lawyers goats and coffee.
Yes, please do.
Nick, do you drink coffee yet?
I don't. I have been don't start. Trying to
What's
avoid
with
coffee.
You?
Don't do it, son.
Why?
I'm sorry. You've been what? I was talking over you. What?
Because I know it's addictive, and I just don't want to be.
Yeah.
I don't want to.
Not. Nah, Nick.
You don't want to talk.
It's not addictive. You can quit anytime.
You don't want to talk fast like us guys.
Yeah. You can quit anytime you want, Nick.
Don't get us started.
I mean, I know all of my teachers love coffee, and my dad is a big coffee guy, and I notice the difference when he doesn't have a cup in the morning.
Follow in your father's footsteps. Listen to your father.
Well, I didn't drink coffee. I wouldn't say I never touched it, but I didn't drink more than a couple cups a year until I was 30 when I got off heroin and started going to AA meetings. And they were like, here, have some coffee. It's free, brother. Have you heard the good news of recovery? Have some coffee. All right, have some coffee. Yeah.
Oh, and actually, a donut.
Actually, yeah, well, I don't need to talk about drugs. All right.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
So, this is the Freedom Fiends. We're gonna take a break in the coffee and come back from the coffee. I want to talk to Nick about his blog and his podcast. And I'm gonna kind of finish installing antivirus program on one of my computers. It's called Avast, and I recommend it. And this is not a paid ad because it's a free program. And I just found that after years of using Norton, as I said before, but if you missed it, Norton actually missed a virus that I had for a while on a non-critical computer, not my main one, but Avast found instantly. So I let all my Norton expire, just expired on the third computer, so I'm installing it on that. And the funny thing is the Avast site was having trouble. I couldn't download it from the Avast site, but you can download it from Amazon. If you go to Amazon and search Avast, it's like you buy it, but it's free. Like you click buy it, it goes in your cart. And then you just download it and there's no charge. So that's a good workaround and news you can use if you want to get off the Norton will take all your money forever and not find all your viruses, apparently, and get on Avast. And after 30 days, you have to register it, but it's still free for the basic unit, and the basic unit does fine. And speaking of computers, we are talking over Fiendphone, and I think it sounds pretty darn good. What do you think, guys? Do you think it sounds good? Are you there?
I think we're just fiend phoning it in.
You're just fiend phoning it in. So Nick,
we're not taking it too seriously.
Yeah, I had you turned down. Okay. So Nick, tell me about how your podcast is going. What's your podcast called? Where can people find it and how's it going?
My podcast is called Anarcho-Yakitalism. It's like anarcho-capitalism, but with yaks instead.
Because you're a yak farmer if people are just tuning in. You're a 16-year-old 4-H member from Oregon. You're getting school credit to be on the Freedom Fiends and talk anarcho-yakitalism late at night past your bedtime. But you'd do that anyway if you weren't getting school credit, right?
Yeah, I would.
Weren't you doing it before you got school credit?
I think so.
Yeah, I think it was just like the school thought you were going to drop out because you're too smart for school. So they said, we'll give you credit to do what you want, right?
Yeah, I think that's the deal we made with them.
All right, so tell me about your podcast. How's it going?
It's going great. This week I was on a show, the Survival Podcast, and they brought a lot of traffic to the website.
Oh, wow.
That was great.
How'd you end up on there? They've never asked me.
they didn't ask me. I found them. Somebody, one of my listeners told me I should apply to be on the show. He has some sort of application process. And I got scheduled, and then he interviewed me.
Did you talk to Muddy Boots?
No.
Muddy Boots is one of the admins there. I know the secret identity of Muddy Boots. He's kind of a mysterious cat and kind of helps run their forum there. And nobody knows who he is, but I went to boarding school with Muddy Boots, and he was a couple years younger than me, and he was kind of getting picked on, and I kind of took him under my wing and was like, okay, avoid that guy, talk to that guy. Don't, you know, like I showed him the ropes and helped him out and helped him get assimilated into school. And he is a really cool, really smart kid, or kid. He's like, you know, 2 years younger than me. He's 40 something. But I was really amazed after, like, you know, 25, 30 years of not talking to him to finally, like, you know, he contacted me and was like, hey, man, I remember, you know, I'm this now. And it's kind of cool because I think that a lot of the people I went to school with are probably, you know, oh, the government will take care of me and I don't need to own a gun. And, but, you know, like, and he's the kind of guy that could, like, you know, start a fire with water in the woods if he needed to, probably. So how'd that go? Tell me about it. How much did it bring? Did it crash your site? How much traffic did you get?
It didn't crash my site, but I think I got around, you know, that whatever my counter is, I think I got about 250 hits in the last 24 hours, and it was put out yesterday morning, the Whoa. Show was. And I got like 4 emails from people and a bunch of comments telling me how great I was, so that was a nice ego boost.
Nice.
But yeah, it went great. I was really happy to be on there. Didn't quite expect too much of a boost in activity, but I did get some, and that's making me kind of want to keep up my streak of 2 podcasts in 2 weeks. I try and do them once a week, but that doesn't work out because of school and the farm.
I wonder what happened with our friend Bernie. Bernie and you started podcasting at the same time, and I helped you both get up and running with it. And Bernie did a bunch of shows that were really great and then didn't do a show for a while. He kind of looked like he was going to maybe pod fade. And I looked at his site the other day and it like didn't even come up. Have you looked at his site lately?
No, but I talked to him about it.
What happened?
I asked him.
Life, Liberty, and Property podcast.
He just said some things came up, but I told him I missed his show. And
yeah, man.
He said, yeah.
I miss his show too. We'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends. We're talking about the Fuhrer principle when we get back. This trip to the market.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
This is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting from Libertarian Reindoctrination Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza in the Alpha Centauri region at Planet Libpair 2017B. And I'm talking to Lysander Fiend. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am here, and I can feel it. Keep your hands to yourself.
And young Nick, the yak farmer, Nick Hazelton from an-yak, an-yak.com. Are you there, sir?
I am here.
Cool. You guys want to talk about the Fuhrer principle? Go ahead, Lou. What is the Fuhrer principle?
All righty. Before I go into the Fuhrer principle, I was just thinking that if Nick got his yaks jacked up on coffee. He could cut like at least a month off of his cross country ride to come out here and check out the urban farming.
Yeah, but they'd probably have a heart attack somewhere in Minnesota before you got to Detroit.
Oh, I don't even know if they'd make it over the Rockies.
Yeah, you need mountain goats.
Yaks are mountain animals.
There you go.
Ooh, they're meant for that.
Yeah, and actually in Wyoming, they have, this is really weird, they have like, I think they have this in Montana too, they have like, the state builds yak crossings or deer crossings. Like they make little bridges and tunnels underneath roads some places so animals can get through.
Yeah, I've seen those.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool for the state. But, you know, it's probably less a, we like animals, and more a, you know, they applied the formula, as they say in Fight Club. Like,
we need to create gerbs.
Well, not just jobs, but, you know, they probably get, it's probably cheaper to do that than to pay for the lawsuits from people hitting yaks on their highways. So, all right, Fuhrer principle, brother man, lay it on me.
All right, the Fuhrer principle, the article here says the Fuhrer principle came to dominate Nazi Germany after Adolf Hitler was appointed chancellor on January 30th, 1933. For anybody that doesn't know, Hitler was known as Der Fuhrer, which means the leader.
He was democratically elected too. So anybody who thinks that if 51% of the country thinks it's a good idea, it's how you have to go, Hitler's a good argument against that.
Yep. The Fuhrer principle played its part within the Nazi Party in the lead up to the in the lead up to 1933, but there were challenges to the would-be Fuhrer from the likes of Gregor Strasser and Walter Stennis. After Hitler's appointment as chancellor, however, a person questioned the Fuhrer principle at their own peril. The Fuhrer principle was a simple concept. Rudolf Hess would probably best summarize the Fuhrer principle when he said in a public speech, "Hitler is Germany. And Germany is Hitler. Whatever he does is necessary. Whatever he does is successful. Clearly, the Fuhrer has divine blessing." And this applies specifically to Hitler. But as I said, the Fuhrer principle means the leader principle. So realistically, this could apply to any type of leader. And it's really not uncommon to get this type of support and mindset out of Romney supporters, Obama supporters, Ron Paul supporters. So anyway, the Fuhrer principle required everyone in Nazi Germany to accept that Hitler had all the solutions to Germany's problems and that whatever he said had to be right. On the day after the Night of the Long Knives, Hitler defended the action of the SS by stating that for 24 hours he had become the law in Germany and the SS was simply carrying out his orders. The Fuhrer principle, in its most basic form, was that what Hitler said had to be carried out, or if it was not the person who challenged, it was betraying Hitler, and therefore it was also betraying Germany. You know, a lot of people, you know, when you criticize the government, they'll say, "You hate America," and they act as if the U.S. government actually is America, and America is the U.S. government. Just a little... Yeah. My two cents there.
I got to interject here. I had a roommate in San Francisco who was in a band called The Long Knives. Was he a bad man? I don't know what that means, The Long Knives.
I'm not really into their stuff.
So do you know, Nick?
The Long Knives is the when they kill people, right?
The Night of the Long Knives was a major purge. But Michael's friend's band, you know, just The Long Knives. I didn't care for their breakout single, The Gas Chamber.
You don't know who I'm talking about. There are more people in my house right now than probably were fans of that band, but there's two people in my house right now. And that includes the three people in the band and their girlfriends. But yeah.
The band was so horrible, the band hated them. But anyway, the propaganda machine went into overdrive to portray Hitler as the leader who put his country before anything else, hence why he was not married until the very end, as he was married to Germany. Images of Hitler with Eva Braun were highly restricted and controlled by the state.
Well, he had to get married, so when he killed himself and saw himself as a hero for taking suicide and shooting himself in the head with his wife, he could go to Valhalla, because he believed in, like, a really twisted, like, combination of, like, Norse theology and Catholicism and, you know, the Fuhrer principle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Here's
one for you. If you're single, Hitler had a girlfriend, that makes him more desirable than you. Ouch. But anyway, yeah, so I mean, the propaganda machine was just really crazy. And what it comes down to is this great man worship, this idea that only Hitler could come up with the solutions to the problems, and Hitler could do this.
It's pronounced worship.
Worship?
Because that's how Ben Stone says it, and he's a great man.
Okay. But anyhow.
I love Ben Stone. But
Yeah, Ben is awesome.
I'm just making a joke, an inside joke, because Ben Stone is the guy that pretty much taught most of us to hate the great man theory, the great man fallacy, the idea that, you know, great men will lead us to victory, because history doesn't play that out at all, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Ben is definitely a great guy.
He's a great guy, but he's not a great man. Yeah.
Right. But yeah, I mean, when the weather was nice, it was called Hitler weather.
No. Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you've ever read the North Korean Constitution, I think every line in the first, I don't know, through the entire prologue says that, who was it? Kim Il-sung was the reason for North Korean greatness. And they literally put into words what people think of the founding lawyers.
You know, North Korea is a really interesting example. It's kind of what I think Germany would have looked like if, instead of trying to conquer the world, they just built a wall around Germany and just stayed there and kept it going for 50 years. That's kind of North Korea.
I don't really know how that would have worked out, though, because if they do build that wall, will there be commerce with their neighboring countries?
No. Well, I don't know, because Germany wouldn't have liked to have the low standard of living that the average citizen has in North Korea.
Yeah, because realistically, if they had just built up a wall and stayed isolated for 50 years, it would have looked like East Germany did.
Yeah, there you go. And which is kind of like, I was in, did you go to East Germany much when you were there, Lou, when you were stationed in West Germany?
When I was stationed there, it was possible to go, but it was a real pain in the butt.
Yeah.
There was a lot of security measures that you had to take, and it just really wasn't worth it to go.
Yeah, and I was there with my rock, I was stationed there with my rock band Bomb right after the wall came down, but I was there when it technically reunified, but it was already totally possible to pass, to go to East Germany. And we went to East Germany, and it was like, it kind of reminded me of when I was a kid. New York State had really high taxes and Pennsylvania had really low taxes. And that was before, like, no matter how much money they had, the roads didn't get built. And it was like, so New York had better roads than Pennsylvania. And literally, like, when I was a kid, when you drive from New York to Pennsylvania, which is like 10 miles from us, we'd go there shopping because they didn't have as much sales tax. As soon as you crossed Pennsylvania, like, you'd see the sign for the state line, and no matter what road you were on, like, you'd cross that sign and then you'd hit a pothole, like, or a bunch of them, like, welcome to Pennsylvania. And
that sounds like Michigan.
Yeah. And East Germany was kind of like that. It was like, literally, you know, you wouldn't think that smog would respect borders, but literally, like, you went from East Berlin to West Berlin, or from West Berlin to East Berlin, and, like, within a couple blocks of passing where the wall used to be, there was, like, more smog, just because, you know, they had, like, these old funky cars that hadn't been tuned up in years and couldn't get parts for, and they didn't run well. And, you know, you go from West Germany to former East Germany, anywhere in the country, and within a mile or so, like, it just got grayer, you know, like the houses weren't painted nearly as frequently. The roads weren't maintained as well. The people were dressed in more drab clothing, and the people, like, looked less healthy and less happy, even though they were now part of the bigger Germany. And, you know, a lot of people were actually against the reunification because it kind of scared them.
Yeah.
It scared them. Like, well, some of them were like, we want to keep up the barriers. And then others were like, you know, make it into two countries, because they didn't like the idea of a strong, united Germany, because that didn't have a good resume. Let's put it that way.
A Fourth Reich.
Yeah, Fifth Reich. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the fear was that there would be a Fourth Reich. But yeah, East Germany was absolutely horrible. And you described it quite well. It's like looking at a black and white picture, but in real life.
And the food was worse. Like, the food was worse. You know, like, 9 months after the reunification, like, they still hadn't figured out how to cook like West Germans yet. Or maybe they didn't have, you know, the food supply yet.
Well, they didn't actually understand about, you know, going to a grocery store and getting something that wasn't rotten.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It was just complete poverty. East Germany was so dirt poor that if it rained in West Berlin, the lights went out in East Berlin.
And, you know, they were also still, when I was there, they were still trying to pass off all their worthless East German money as change, like the metal money. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I know a lot of people that were trying to speculate, and they were going to buy a bunch of the East German marks and then turn them in at the favorable exchange rate. And I don't think that worked out too well.
Yeah. I think it would have been better off melting them for scrap. Although they were made of they were light. They were like aluminum or something, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a real mess. Yeah. But going back to the great man theory, if you look at all of these great socialist utopias like East Germany and the Soviet Union, North Korea, America is becoming that way now, is this idea that you have these uncanny people, these great leaders that can centrally plan and control the economy or control the lives of others and bring people to greatness. And this is just absolute nonsense.
Yep.
So abandon the great man theory. Abandon the Führer principle.
Okay.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows. Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by The Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
So Nick, was that a yes or a no?
That's a no.
Okay. So we're going to talk about the boogeyman theory, which is the boogeyman fallacy, or the boogeyman great man. What do you call it? Principle.
Oh, Führer. The Führer principle, which is closely related to the theory of the great man, or the myth of the great man, or as I just straight up call it, the great man fallacy.
Yeah.
The idea that there is this great superhuman that
Übermensch.
Yeah, that has just, capabilities that escape the rest of humanity. But the flip side of that coin would be the boogeyman. If you look at the bad guy or something like that, take for example a serial killer like David Berkowitz or Ted Bundy or any of them. What you hear about these people is evil incarnate, or Saddam Hussein, Osama bin Laden, or somebody else that I can't even pronounce their name properly. These people are just the devil incarnate. They have an evil that only Satan himself could have. But the reality is, they're just men. I think one of the best examples of that would be the movie Seven, as the killer's going around and doing these definitely horrible murders. Morgan Freeman says to Brad Pitt, "Now, if it turns out to be the devil himself, all this other stuff, but when he gets apprehended, when he turns himself in, it's just Kevin Spacey. He's almost not the
boring
devil.
He's like a boring, like the guy next door that you wouldn't even want to say hi to because he's so boring." Yeah,
he's just a man, a mere mortal human like the rest of us. And one of the things that that Ben says, Ben Stone, and I really like this when he's talking about the founding fathers or even the big names in the liberty community, they're men, not gods. And people have this tendency to hoist these people upon a pedestal, like the founding lawyers or Ron Paul or Barack Obama, Mitt Romney, whoever it is, Adolf Hitler, Der Führer. And they're just men. They're not gods. They have no special magic or anything like that.
Yeah. And I want to clarify, I wasn't saying that Kevin Spacey's boring. I think he's a pretty fascinating actor, but his character and his portrayal of it is intentionally written and played so ordinary that it's frighteningly loud in its irony. And that's kind of cool. I like that. That's a cool thing. So the other side of the great man thing, like what you were talking about the boogeyman side of it is, people believing that if you can just get rid of this one greatly horrible man, everything will be okay. Like the classic example is, you know, there's like a thought experiment. If you could go back in a time machine and kill baby Hitler, would you do it? No, you'd just be a baby killer. Like, you know, if you killed him, you know, if you killed him, another one would have taken its place or something else would have happened. You know, and the boogeyman theory is what the U.S. government lives on and most governments live on is the idea of the other, of we have to demonize this whole class of people and eliminate them and then we'll be free, you know. And
yeah. We are the only ones that can do this. Watch out for the others. And going back to that, if you could go kill baby Hitler, would you? What you have to take a look at is what created the situation that some tin pot dictator like Hitler could come to power. Basically, Hitler went out there and he promised hope and change after the horribly punitive, destructive reparations that were laid down by the League of Nations after World War One. The reparations that they had to pay, they wound up, you know, printing their money into destruction.
Well,
printing on one side.
This is how tyrants always come to power, is either the left or the right wrecks everything, and then the opposite party comes along and says, I'll save you from their destruction. And, you know, the League of Nations was a lefty thing, and Hitler was kind of right. He was a weird mix of right and left, because he was a socialist, but he pretty much would end up on the right wing of most political charts, left-right political charts. So, yeah, he was the right-winger saving people from the left-wingers of the World League of Nations. The World League of Nations.
Yeah, if you want to destroy, go back in history and destroy something, destroy the League of Nations.
You mean the UN?
Yeah, but, you know, then Woodrow Wilson would have created something else.
Yeah, he would have.
Or FDR someone else would have.
Or Joseph Stalin would have. Or the Kaiser would have.
So forget about government. Defeat the state, the religion that legitimizes the existence of governments
in people's
states.
In people's minds. Yeah.
Annelids.
Annelids. Worms.